Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I'm here with my co-host, Ilawa Orizo. Just a friendly reminder, if you like what you're hearing, you can follow us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just search Real Talks. That's R-E-E-L Talks. Just like my name, S-T-E-L-E. Also, you can follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Wannabe Rounder, LinkedIn, and on Instagram at Deacon Dudo. Where can they find you, Ilawa?
I'm also on LinkedIn and on Instagram, and it should be fairly easy to find me. There's not two Ilawa Zorazens out there, so it's E-L-O-A-O-R-A-Z-E-M.
Just a couple of quick announcements. Our Patreon channel recently just went live about a month ago. You can find it by typing Real Talks into the search bar. Let me tell you a little about it. We're offering five different levels to support us at $5, $10, $20, $30, and $40. If you do choose to support us, you'll have the opportunity to get some great perks, such as earning your name shouted out before every podcast, cool merch, and if you're one of our major contributors, you'll get a one-hour monthly Zoom meeting with Ilawa and myself. For more details, just go to the website. I'll leave the link in the description. Which leads me to my next big announcement. We're only 24 short hours away from the introduction of Flashback Friday. We're almost here, people, where Anne and myself will be discussing films from the past. The first film we'll be discussing will be Iron Man. And then we're going to be doing every single MCU movie in chronological order. I can't reiterate enough. Hit that follow button so you never miss a podcast. This is our weekly roundup show, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Netflix made a lot of headlines this week for a few different reasons. I'll tell you why in a bit. Would studios actually consider not filming in Georgia because of the abortion ban? We'll talk about that. Kevin Feige is upset with how much the trailers of the new Doctor Strange movie showed, but projections are through the roof. I'll tell you how much. And yesterday was Star Wars Day. I got a fun story about how James Earl Jones made for voice in Darth Vader. But before we get to all that, we do have to pay the bills. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Leadership, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starfleet Leadership Academy. Its ongoing mission to develop leaders through Star Trek, to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. A Star Trek podcast told through the lens of leadership development. Subscribe today, the Starfleet Leadership Academy.
Welcome back. So, we have a lot to get to. Let's dive right in. So, our first story comes from Deadline. Deadline broke the news late last night that Dave Chappelle was attacked by a man while on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. Today, the comedian Netflix, which produced the festival of the show, which was a part of, both issued press statements on the matter. A Chappelle spokesperson sought to put the emphasis back on the comedian's run of shows at the Bowl. As part of Netflix, it's a joke festival. Dave Chappelle celebrated four nights of comedy and setting records-breaking sales for a comedian at the Hollywood Bowl, read the statement. This run ties Chappelle with Monty Python for the most headline shows by any comedian at the Hollywood Bowl, reaching 70,000 fans of diverse backgrounds during the It's a First, Netflix is a joke festival. And he refused to allow last night's incident to overshadow the magic of this historical moment. The statement goes on to say, as unfortunate and unsettling as the incident was, Chappelle went on with the show. Jamie Foxx and Chris Rock helped calm the crowd with humor before Chappelle introduced the last and featured musical guest for the evening, hip-hop artist Arzeen Bui, also known as Black Star, who performed music from their new album, the first in nearly 24 years, which was released on Luminary. Other special comedian guests last night included Earthquake, Leslie Jones, Jeff Ross, Sebastian, Jon Stewart, and Michelle Wolf. By all accounts, Fox and Rock helped certainly calm the crowd and subdue the attacker in Fox's case. Chappelle also tired to ease jangled nerves before he left the stage, possibly to prevent violence from erupting among the understandable wounded crowd, saying, "Everybody compose yourself." A Netflix spokesperson says, "We deeply care about the safety of our creators and strongly defend the right stand-up comedians to perform on stage without fear of violence." So, one can only wonder if this has some effect of what happened only a few short months ago at the Oscars. Do you think this has any correlation to it?
So hard to say. I think we can say yes or no to that question. Both of them might be correct or wrong, right? So we'll never know. That's the truth. We'll never know until someone actually talked to the aggressor and ask him his motivations and maybe what happened. I think it is similar though, right? It's just, someone coming to stage and attacking, the stand-up comedian. I think that's, unfortunately, it's very similar. What do you think? You think it's just a coincidence?
I like to say yes, Silva, but you know what? I mean, there's always, when something always happens, a big magnitude of something like what Will Smith did at the Oscars, you're always going to have repeat offenders. You're always going to have people. And the worst part about it is they're going to justify it. Well, Will Smith did it, so why can't I do it? And my question is, why wouldn't the Hollywood Bowl actually hire security for the event? Or even if it's Netflix's responsibility. If they say they care about their creators, why aren't they doing something about it?
There were securities, no? There were securities all around. Yeah, even when, I mean, the moment he was attacked, the securities come to the stage.
Yeah, okay, so if there was security, okay. But how, he must have been in the first couple rows then. I mean, how does, and I don't know the layout of the Hollywood Bowl, so forgive me on this, but how does somebody, let's say, jump a barricade and get on stage? I mean, it must have been pretty quick.
There's no barricade, and Hollywood Bowl is actually gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful venues I've ever been to, personally. And yeah, there's no barricade. It's fairly, and it comes to that, like, I don't think anyone was expecting for that to happen too, you know, like those security guards, they're probably like, they all have been doing these gigs or this type of event, and like, yeah, it's gonna be a chill one, it's just a stand-up comedian, it's not like a bunch of hysterical fans actually trying to climb up the stage to hug, kiss and love their celebrities, you know. So I think people are just legit not expecting. I wouldn't blame the security guards on this. But yeah, so that's why I think it was easy, because at the end of the day, we're not expecting, like, it's the same thing. I know this is a very long stretch of a comparison, but listen, until 9/11, we were not required to take off our shoes to go into an airplane, you know? And then it's like, oh, why weren't we taking the shoes before? Because, like, nobody can possibly understand something like this happening.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, but see the difference, and I mean, 9/11 obviously changed air travel. There's no doubt about that.
9/11 tax every time we fly.
I would say the difference between that and what happened is that was an individual incident.
No, absolutely. That's why it's a long stretch. I'm not trying to compare.
No. I understand. I get it. But yeah, so. And I talked about this when it first, I mean, if you go back and listen to the other podcast, I talked about when this happened originally, what places are now going to have to do, the Laugh Factory and all these comedy clubs and everybody else, is that they're going to have to hire security if they don't already have them, especially in these smaller clubs. And what will end up happening is that you as a consumer are going to be paying more for a ticket to go to these places like the Laugh Factory and everything else, because they have to pay for the cost of security. And it's eventually going to come out of your pocket. And some comedians are going to be like, well, you know, this is the second time this has happened in 4 months or whatever. How do I know? And by the way, at a small comedy club, I mean, you got the tables. It's no more than 15 feet in front of you. So how do I know if I don't say the right joke that this is going to happen to me? Are comedians then going to have to tailor their routines to make sure that they don't get criticism? I gotta really wonder. So, you know, this is tough, because I got a feeling within the next few months, at some place in this country, somewhere on a Friday night, you're gonna hear about some comedian, even if it's a no name. I mean, don't forget, that was Dave Chappelle. You're gonna hear about a no name comedian getting attacked. That's just a personal thing, because now that this person did it to Dave Chappelle, who's famous, who says that John Smith doesn't do it in, I don't know, Timbuktu, Arizona? Do you know what I mean?
I feel like we have to understand the motivation. Also, you get a lot of press by attacking David Chappelle. You probably won't get a lot of press just punching regular Joe in the face in somewhere else in the middle of the country. You know, like I also feel like if they're doing this for attention, they're not going to go for the small fish, you know, like if that's his intention, if they are looking to get their 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that, because obviously the bigger the name, the bigger the attention. I think that people, if somebody's going to do this, they're not going to care who it is. They're not going to care because they're going to make headlines anyways. It doesn't matter that they're not going to make national headlines. They may make local headlines or regional headlines, but it's not about, oh, well, it's, you know, Dave. The person, it's not going to matter about the person. It's going to matter that they were able to do it. It's like when you have these clowns that decide that they're going to run on the field, okay? Oh, they're not thinking about, oh, how many people am I going to get to see me? It's just about the stunt itself.
Yeah, I think that's a different thing, yes.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. But, yeah, so at the end of the day, the goal is that we hope that this isn't going to happen again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we're trying to curb in the whole thing. So, but Netflix is still in the headlines. So Netflix is being sued by several different shareholders. And this comes from Deadline. A Netflix shareholder has sued the streamer for violating security laws after slowing subscriber growth led to a sharp decline in the company's stock price. The suit filed by United States District Court in the Northern District of California by Imperium Irrevocable Trust seeks class action status on behalf of all other similarly situated who lost money, specifically who own Netflix shares between October 19th of 2021 and April 19th of 2022. It named the Netflix co-CEOs, many more. Shareholder suits are common and face a high bar, but this one is the latest headache for the streaming leader, whose weaker than expected subscriber numbers recently have thrown not just Netflix, but in the entire DTC sector under a critical Wall Street glare. The stockholder alleged that Netflix, quote, failed to disclose material adverse facts, end quote, in a timely manner, causing plaintiffs, quote, significant losses and damages. On January 22nd of this year, the suit notes that the company acknowledged over-forecasting fourth quarter net adds, anticipating the first quarter adds would fall short of the expectations, and the stock fell 22% the next day. It goes on to say that it gives many different reasons, five different reasons why the defendants failed to disclose this to the investors. So, and we talked about this when it first happened, that now that they're in trouble, I mean, they've lost another, so since, let's say, 3 or 4 months, or even since it first came out, they lost 200,000 subscribers, the stock's dropped 50%. And his shareholders are like, wait a minute here, we weren't told this. We were told this is all, you know, unicorns and rainbows. So the question now becomes is, do you think the shareholders have a case?
I don't think so. I don't. I honestly don't. I think when you are in the stock market, first of all, you buy the risk. There's always a risk. What they're basically saying is that Netflix was misleading, which I don't think it's true. I don't think Netflix was misleading. I think they had a target. They're definitely not going to be able to, but a very strong argument or a very strong point of view that they're definitely going to take to court is, you know, the Ukraine and Russia conflict. We have to remember, everyone, that Netflix is not in Russia anymore. That costed them over how many, like 700,000 followers, if I'm not wrong, which is a lot. It's a lot. Yeah, 700,000 members. I'm not sure if everyone is paid or not. I don't know exactly how the deal is. It's not misleading. Things happen and you pay for the risk. If you're in the stock market, dude, you cannot wait everything to be rainbows and sunshines. It's just that American has a very sensitive spot and it's called wallet.
Yeah, I think that if you're part of a company, and this company, we'll call it Company A, if Company A says that we're coming out with a new product and we're actually going to be doing this, and we're actually going to be exhibiting growth, and then it turns around and later on they start dropping market value. not just regular market value, significant market value. The stock had dropped 22% in one day. I mean, that's not something to sneeze at.
Well, but that's always speculation. We have to remember this, you know. And it, now that they're being sued, it's probably going to go down even more. And again, I don't think they are, it's not Netflix's fault. You know, like one thing is if you tell me, I'm going to open orange juice company. It's going to be organic and amazing and it's all great. I'm going to import it from Cambodia and Brazil. This is the label and this is my strategy. Great. I'm like, here's my money. It sounds amazing. I trust you. I think this is great. But then we have a thunderstorm in Brazil. Like you lost half of your supplier. And I sue you. It's nothing that you didn't mislead me. We all have to take in consideration that the world is a live organism and things happen. Things just happen. And whenever you're buying a business, you're also buying the risks. And that's the difference of a good investor, in my opinion, is that you can foresee things. I mean, if you're buying Netflix and you're not taking in consideration that HBO is there, Peacock is investing more money than ever, Apple is also in the play, all these streaming companies are coming after Netflix. Of course it's going to lose subscriber. It used to be just one pie for everyone. Now people have a lot of pies to choose from. And not everyone is going to want Netflix.
Yeah, but if that orange juice is... I guess my thing is this. If upper management is telling me one thing, that we're actually going to be doing well, and the projections are we're going to be making money... And by the way, Wall Street is the ultimate gamble, right? You have people out there spending millions and millions and millions of dollars, and it's going up and it's going down in seconds, whether you're trading soybeans or stocks. That's not the debate here. The debate is, if I'm investing in a company or I'm a shareholder in a company, and let's say it's your orange juice market, okay, and you're telling me I've got a great, you know, plan and everything else, and I expect to be making all this money in X amount of time. And then it turns out that thunderstorm hits and now it's a limited supply of oranges, which means when you harvest those oranges, you're going to pay more for the orange juice. And then because people don't want to pay more for the orange juice, they say, well, you know what? We want to stop buying this. The thing is, it's one thing to lose your money. It's another thing to be misled. Every single stockholder in America will tell you this. There's always risk involved. Whether it's Merrill Lynch or Fidelity, there's always risk involved. But when you're being misled, that's where people really, they don't like being lied to. And when you have things like the FTC.
I still don't think that Netflix was misleading. They're claiming that this lawsuit is not taking in consideration the price of inflation, again, the conflict in Ukraine and Russia. So there's a lot going on there. You cannot just say, yeah, you know, you told me you would make money, but you're not making money. It's like, well, this happened, you know, like, and we're not expecting this or that. Maybe they have a better worst case scenario strategy to come up with. We'll see. I mean, it's going to be an ugly fight. I can only assume. Which is not good for Netflix. Either way, it's not good for Netflix. And
well, and this is why I think they were trying to come up with that ad-supported tier. So right now, if you're a Netflix subscriber, you have, you know, this amount. And my guess is you're going to be paying an extra $5 or $6, okay? And then if you're paying an extra $5 or $6, then...
It's so funny. We all go back to what... I think we've talked about it. We're going to go back to... You know, like that whole thing is like the great thing about this the streaming companies is you don't have to wait anymore. You have it all there. You can watch it all at the same time. Now they're releasing one chapter every week, you know, like, so it's like, oh, it is the same. And now back with ads and public. The thing is, Netflix model does not work. It doesn't work, period. So that's why, like, I think if you bought Netflix, and you sold it, that's great. But if you bought it now, like, you kind of don't understand how the world is working right now. It's same goes to radio, like radio and podcasts is becoming the exact same thing. Those model work. I'm sorry. We're all going to go back
to that. So, but I will say one thing, though. The once a week model, and Disney Plus figured this out a long time ago. And this is why they had the number one show in the world with WandaVision, and they had the number one show in the world with Mandalorian and all this, is they realized the one thing Netflix does is they'll throw, let's say a season's 10 episodes. They'll throw 10 episodes on there all at once. So it's your favorite show. You want to sit down on a weekend and bang it out. And it's done. Now you've got to wait another 18 months before they even get another episode of your favorite show out there, right? What Disney Plus and all these other subscribers are doing, or these streaming markets, is...
It's the same what TV was doing, yes.
No, absolutely, and I would agree with you. But what I'm saying is that there's a difference between a Netflix doing this and a Disney Plus. And the Disney Plus model loves... And has figured out that if you do this once a week, you get all that clamoring and everything else, the buildup, and then you get the clamor.
Saying that they invented the wheel, because we all knew, David, we all knew that. We never needed Netflix to know that it wouldn't work. It's so obvious. It's like, it's mind-blogging that people never thought about that. It's literally mind-blogging. Like, of course you want to hold attention. Of course you want to build up momentum. You don't want to spend, like, yes, if you give me 10 episodes and I love the show, you better wait that I'm going to be home the entire weekend watching everything and eating my popcorn. But if you make me wait, of course that's going to be spread out. Like, they just invented the... I'm so sorry. The model that works is the television model, and we're all going back to that because someone needs to pay the price. No one is willing to pay $100 for a streaming service, I guess. So we're all going to go back to that. We're probably going to pay a fraction.
Well, I mean, one thing is for sure. Whatever goes up must come down, right? Law of gravity. So, I mean, at some point, even if you're Amazon, right? I mean, it's a $2,000 share of stock. It's eventually going to come down. I mean, that's like this market just lost 1,100 points today. All these stocks just dropped like a rock. So we'll see. I mean, that's to be continued.
Yeah, I want to see how Blockbuster people are. They're probably celebrating so much right now. Saying, yeah, you disrupt my business, yours.
And the last thing I'll say to this is this, and I said this a couple weeks ago, a lot of people, at the end of the day, it comes down to money. I think we can both agree to that. But the one thing I'll say is this, if you have a certain budget to spend on entertainment, okay, and you don't want to pay like an extra $5 or $6 for ad-supported tiers and whatever else, you're either going to do one of two things. You're either going to spread out your dollar to get different streaming services, whether it's Peacock or HBO Max or whatever it is, or and what you're going to, we'll talk about this in a couple minutes, is they're going to go back to the theater because the cinema is now starting to get to the point where people starting to come back. And if that's the case, we've got a lot of things coming out this summer. So this is a to-be-continued conversation. This is a huge... Now, normally, I'm not a politics guy and whatever else, but I definitely want to get your input on this. So, according to Variety, studios are now rethinking their filming in Georgia if the abortion ban is upheld. The major entertainment studio spoke out against Georgia's, quote, heartbeat abortion bill in 2019, saying they would, quote, rethink, end quote, their production plans if the state put this in, if the law went into effect. That moment appears to be approaching fast. On Monday, Politico reported a Supreme Court majority signed onto a decision that would overturn v. Roe v. Wade. The 1973 opinion protecting the right to abortion, The Georgia law would outlaw abortions as early as 6 weeks into a pregnancy, has been on hold pending the outcome of this case. If the leaked draft opinion becomes final, then Georgia's law would be allowed to take effect. So far, no entertainment studio has said it would do that if it happened. Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Sony declined to comment. A Netflix representative could not be reached for comment, and a Disney spokesperson didn't want to comment either. The MPA, the Motion Picture Association, is all done. Declined to comment. Georgia is a massive hub for television and film production, and their profits reached a record $1.2 billion last year. Several other states, including Louisiana, Kentucky, Texas, and Ohio, have also significant film subsidies. and would also outlaw most abortions if Roe is overturned. Over the last decade, the studios have gotten involved into a series of social controversies in conservative states, often spurred by their own employees. Most recently, Disney came out against Florida's law regarding classroom instruction of sexual orientation and gender identity, which critics dubbed Don't Say Gay, but only after employees protested. This is big. This is big for the simple fact of if studios stop filming in Georgia, California is another one of these states, you could see a serious, serious decline in jobs. At the end of the day, I mean, this is a huge issue, and I'm not dismissing it. But if you got to also understand, the crews behind these productions, they number in the thousands, even if they're not on set. So where do you, first of all, I guess I have two questions for you. Number one, where do you stand on this? And number two, do you think studios would ever pull out of Georgia because of this?
It's so hard. I mean, look at what we did to Russia, right? Everyone is pulling everything off Russia. We're unplugging Russia from the world, basically. So yeah, they can do that if they want. They are doing it already in some other places. And it's interesting to me. I feel like it's very bold to do something that you know is going to hurt you, but then you're standing for what you believe in. I think that's very bold. At the same time, I think we should, first of all, I feel like I'm the most hypocrite human in the world because I stand for so many principles and so many morals, but at the end of the day, I don't do nothing that is inconvenient to me. Like, definitely want a better world. Am I a volunteer in something? No. You know? So I'm kind of a hypocrite. Yeah. Like, I want a better world, but I don't really do anything to help it out. I mean, I try not to be a horrible person. And I feel like in Brazil, we have a saying that says, well, if you're not on the way, you're already helping some. So I think that's my comfort zone thing. So, okay, all that to say that I admire those who actually take action. Because it's inconvenient. Let's say you care profoundly about hunger, okay? So every night or at least once a week, you come home from work, you're tired and you still cook some food to donate it to people close to your house. I admire that. It's not convenient to you to take your time, you know, after a long day of work and you commit to something. So I very much admire those who take action. So then I salute the studios for thinking about that. It's like, yeah, it's going to hurt you too. You know, it's not going to hurt them, but no one's going to come out of this intact. So there's that. The same claims that we made to Russia, basically saying that the sanctions that we imposed are hurting Russian people more than the wealth and the government itself. Basically, we're saying, well, that's not hurting the billionaires because all their families and assets, they're all elsewhere. They're in London, in America, living a great life. So those who are suffering are poor people that are not really, they don't have a lot of support already. We can say the same about Georgia, you know, like those who are going to be hurt. It's not like if you're a very talented director, a very talented stunt, you're not going to have a hard time maybe finding a job elsewhere if you're willing to move and you have the privilege to move. But, you know, if you're maybe the cleaning crew, yeah, that's going to hurt you a lot, tremendously.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
But I feel like overturning Roe versus Wade is hurting the entire country.
And you just said it. Because it's a whole, it doesn't matter if you're African-American, Caucasian, Samoan, Native American. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are. If you're a woman, and you can speak better this obviously than I can, I would imagine you want the right to choose. And if this unfortunately, you're going to have the few make the decision for the many. Because at the end of the day, you're going to have the heads, let's say, or, you know, a board of men, okay? And this is where, yeah, I'll say this much. If you're going to have this decision made, you need to have women in the room. You need to have women in the conversation. You cannot leave this up to a bunch of old Caucasian males. You can't.
Absolutely. And it's also important that, you know, Roe versus Wade is here for a while. So it's not mandatory if you and your partner decide to have a kid, no one is going to force you to have an abortion. It's an option. It's an option. And I know many women that have done it. And I can guarantee that it's not an easy choice. I met a girl who became severely depressed, and she's still guilty years. I met her 2 months after she did her abortion. Of course, she didn't tell me at the time, but we created a good friendship, and she explained why she was so thin and quiet and shaky when we first met, and it all made sense, right? And I'm still friends with this girl, and it's been, what, 10, 15 years almost, and she's still a little guilty. So what I'm trying to say is that women are not doing this because it's fun. It's not a Disneyland. It's a resource that we have to choose out of maybe desperation. And I come from a country where abortion is not allowed. So all these women that I'm talking about, they all done it in a country where it's not allowed. And that makes things so much harder, because they cannot share with anyone. They're embarrassed. They have to, well, first of all, you have to have a lot of privilege, because it's extremely expensive, right? It's super expensive. It's under the table. You don't feel safe. You don't feel comfortable. I feel like it's just a torture for women. It's not going to stop them from making an abortion. We've all read that online. You're just going to stop safe abortion. And you're punishing these women in women in ways that you cannot even imagine.
I mean, it's just one of these things that if studios do decide to pull out of this, as I said, and it's a big if, but if they do decide to pull out of it, they need to have women to make their case of why, if this is going to happen, they need to have the other perspective. I mean, you know, this is, and I'll be honest with you, this is why I wanted a female co-host. Because two guys, I could shoot the shit, you know, me and somebody else for 45 minutes. But something about that, I can never even compartmentalize or anything to that extent of what that you might go through psychologically, emotionally, what have you. Somebody like yourself, being from another country, it's a completely different thing. Now when you talk about privilege, okay, now, as I keep going back to it, you need to have women in the room. So I hope.
And just an heads up, you have to have women in the room and religion out of the room.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Like, I come from a very Catholic family. Very Catholic family. My grandfather actually built the Catholic church in the neighborhood he lived. So that's how freaking important religion is to my people, right? And I'm still saying we shouldn't make my family's belief. We shouldn't bring that up when we're trying to create laws for everyone else, because people have different beliefs, right? And you can choose to believe it or not, and you act that way. You act like you know, if you think it's not sacred to eat this or drink that, I'm going to respect and fight for your right to do so. But I'm not going to dictate that the entire world to stop eating this or drinking that.
This is going to be very interesting to see what happens moving forward. So, anyways, hey guys, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast but don't know where to start? Let me tell you, it's easier than you think. I use Anchor.fm. It has all the tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts from either your computer or your phone. And let me tell you, that's great if you have a busy job like mine. It's got everything you'll need to make your podcast successful. And the best part is, it doesn't cost you a thing. It's free. When you host on Anchor, you'll get everything you need to distribute your podcast to a bunch of different platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and much more. So go download the Anchor app today, or go to anchor.fm.com to get started. Okay, so let's move on to something a little more lightheartedness. And that is the new Doctor Strange movie, which I know you're not the biggest Marvel girl, but you're dying to see. So Kevin Feige thinks that the Doctor Strange 2, the trailers revealed too many spoilers. And this comes from Joe Blow. It's tough to keep the plot details of a major blockbuster under wraps, but the folks at Marvel Studios have their work cut out for them. Over the years, we've seen leaks from various sources, toys, concept art, and even slips of the tongue, but sometimes it's a moving marketing that feels just a little too much. While on the red carpet for the world premiere of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Marvel President Kevin Feige said that he thinks that the trailers for the film have revealed too many spoilers. Quote, "There's been too much in the trailers. I don't want to talk about anything else. But I will say Sam Raimi, has made this movie to be experienced on as big a screen as possible. Even if it's the first one in a long time that 3D was taken into account because the first Doctor Strange film, I think, was the best film in 3D ever. And this one is going to be right alongside. On the road to release of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, trailers and TV spots have teased members of the Illuminati, among the other tidbits that would have been best left for the theaters. As unpleasant as spoilers are for some, Kevin Feige is aware at the end of the day the movie needs to work on, quote, regardless of what has been spoiled or not. So, okay. I'm dying to see this. I was going to go see this before I recorded this today, but I didn't because I wanted to be here with you and, you know, all of that. I heard a number today, and just take a guess at how much they're talking about estimating this movie to make. Just take a guess. Opening weekend.
I'm going to $274 million.
You're not too far off, Ella. The projections for this movie opening weekend is $192 to $222 million. Unbelievable. Now,
just as a side note, so when we're talking about those predictions, we're talking about money. Everything's more expensive now than it was 2 years ago. So, of course, so it doesn't mean that there are more people watching this, that they watch different movies. So let's all be clear here, guys. We're talking about money, not about audience.
True. Very true. So, but now there's a couple of things that I'm going to chime in on here. Number one, I've tried to limit my number of I'm usually all about trailers and everything else. I've tried to limit my number of trailers here just because I want to go in. That being said, it has a couple of things that have going for it. Number one, okay, this is coming right off the heels of Spider-Man No Way Home, okay, which, I mean, anybody who's seen it, if you haven't, go see it. It's on demand right now, and probably it opened at $250 million, okay? That's number one. Number two, it is a Marvel movie, so we know that much. But the fact is now we have the villain in WandaVision, okay, who is going to be in, okay? So the continuing saga of this going on. And number three, this is the first movie of the year. And when I say the year, I mean the blockbuster season. When we talked to Ryan, I thought that it might, and he said, might make $55 or $60 million. I said it was more like $65 or $70. The other thing, too, is, and I had Jeff Aiken on the other day, and we'll play that for you in the coming days, but he used to work at a Regal, and he was a general manager, and he said that the biggest thing that he had to do was keep the lights on and everything else, but he also scheduled showtimes. Now, there is an AMC time in Times Square in New York City that, I'm not kidding you when I say this, has 47 showtimes in one day. And this is why this is probably going to make that much money. But I think that, do I think it's fair?
It's just because that's the studio buying those showtimes too. It's like,
No. I could be wrong about this, and I'll ask Jeff about this when I speak to him next time. Here's the thing, okay? When a show is put into a theater, okay, you have a movie. I want the movie. I pay you to bring it into my theater to show. The more theaters I have, the more money you're going to make. That's first of all. Because let's face it, they're going to, it's all about the money, right? Moreover than that, this is a worldwide phenomenon. And there's another key thing I think needs to be said here. This movie is only 2 hours. The total running time in this movie, from when the first frame comes onto the screen till the last frame leaves after all the credits are done, is only 2 hours and 6 minutes. That's pretty short. Now, you take it, which means that you're going to have a lot of repeat showings because it is so short. So I think the fact that it's so short, even though it's all these theaters and it's playing in all these times, you're not going to have Top Gun come out until 3 weeks later, okay? Top Gun is probably going to make $80 or $90 or $100 million. But this Doctor Strange thing is going to be a juggernaut. Now, it's not going to make as much money at that point. Although, I will say this, I'll be shocked if it rivals it. All that being said. So the article talks about the president thinking too many spoilers were in the trailers, the TV spots. If you were going to go see a movie, and like I said, I mean, you know that you're not the biggest Marvel girl, but if you were going to go see this movie, and you are, how many trailers do you think a studio should put out between the time that they first announced the film, the very first teaser trailer, to when it's released?
Oh my God, I don't know. I don't understand a lot about his strategy. I feel like maybe two or three tops should be more than enough. I mean, most of the times I just remember one trailer for a movie. I feel like they're trying to build up, you know, momentum, and it's like, it's huge too. Like in Brazil, they had the premiere there as well. They hired some impressive influencers. And so it was all over social media as well. So it's something that we've never seen. So it's all about the things too. It's like, is it that good? Or is the expectation that they're building more than... We all love to feel part of a club. So sometimes I'm not sure if we actually like it or if you just like it that we are not part of the conversation as well. You know, it's like, for me, it's a very sensitive spot. I just remember, I think it was Harry Potter. I don't know which one of them was. But I remember going to the movie theater to see this other show. And it was so frustrated because there was like 12 options to see Harry Potter and just one to see something else. And I'm like, I don't want to watch Harry Potter. I want to watch something else. And I didn't even have the option. It was not even an option. And so then I watched Harry Potter. And then how many of those are here? People that want just, especially because this weekend is Mother's Day. So there's a lot of people going home, and going to the movies is probably something we all like to do with our families or loved ones, especially if you don't live in a big city where you like to, you know, there's a lot to do. It's just a safe. I remember me and my cousins, we would all go to the movie theater Christmas night, because in Brazil we party from the 24th to the 25th. So during the night, and then we all had lunch together as family, huge lunch. And then everyone is like, of course, full on food coma afterwards. So all the adults at the time would be sleeping and we would just crash the movies, right? So I feel like something similar might happen now on Mother's Day, which is considered by the industry the second Christmas.
And by the way, I hadn't even thought of Mother's Day. But that just shows you the impact and the worldwide phenomenon this is. Mother's Day is what's up there with one of those holidays, and it's not even being... I mean, it's going to be recognized, but everybody's going to be talking about Doctor Strange. But I think... So, the fact is, I think there are too many TV spots for this. You don't need to... And I was thinking about something else the other day is, you know... When I was talking with Ian, who, by the way, Flashback Friday again is going to be dropping, their first episode of Flashback Friday is going to be dropping tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. So the fact is that Marvel has a grip on the movies, and they're dropping between 2 to 3 feature films a year. So it's like one in January, one in the summer, one in the winter. And I mean, this is a perfect example. You've got Doctor Strange, which is going to be premiering or has premiered in some markets. It's going to be opening world nationwide tomorrow. You've got Thor, that's coming out in July. And then you've got Black Panther movie coming out in October. So, but the point is this. Too many spoilers. I think that they need to limit the number of television spots. I think they need to limit the number of trailers. You don't need any more than 2 trailers. Okay, because you're already going to get the hype. And you're already going to get this. So... When you have too many trailers and too many television spots, of course there's going to be spoilers. So I'll be curious to see for the next movie, which is going to be out in less than 6 weeks, but I'll be curious to see if the marketing strategy doesn't change for this. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, is it still going to make that much? I don't think that it's going to make that much. But, so yeah. So getting back to the opening weekend, if... This makes, so there's only been 7 movies in cinema history ever to make $200 million, okay? Avengers Endgame, Infinity War, of Spider-Man No Way Home. You've got The Avengers, which was 10 years ago. That made 2007. The Last Jedi. Force Awakens. Oh, and Jurassic World. That's it. This could blow away. If this makes $220-some-odd million, it would be the fifth largest opening.
Again, we have to take into consideration the inflation. The tickets are more expensive now than ever.
It has nothing to do with tickets because a lot of people, they have these memberships. These Regal passes or the AMC movie pass. Or
I think we should stop looking at, you know, the box weekend as just a number of just the profit and talk to me about the audience. Like 152,000 people or 2 million people have seen it or 5 million people have seen it. This is, I think it's so much more fair because, you know, you're talking about a movie 10 years ago making $200 million. That's for me super impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the thing is about that movie that you had four movies. You had Iron Man, you had Iron Man 2, you had Thor, and you had Captain America. And that first Avengers movie was that $200 million movie I was talking about. That was pre-pandemic. The other interesting thing about this is if this does make over $200 million, you're talking about the second movie in 6 months to make $200 million after the pandemic?
I'm saying it's just because from now on, I think it's going to be easier to make $200 million. But 10 years ago, making over $200 million, that's...
Yeah, that was impressive. Nobody ever thought that that would happen. And just one little last nugget here, and I'll move on. If this does make $200 million, four movies of the top five all-time opening weekend will be one. And it's made to date almost $10 billion. Yes, that's with a B, ladies and gentlemen. $1 billion. Anyways, I could go on and on. But here is an interesting... So yesterday, you're not a big Star Wars fan, are you? You're like, nah, not so much. Okay, I didn't think so. But for all those people... So yesterday was Star Wars Day. And I came across this article, and I thought this was going to be absolutely fascinating for all those Star Wars fans. So the icon, James Earl Jones... Now, guess how much he made? And we're just going to talk about money real quick. In 1977, we all know he was the voice of one of the most iconic villains in history, Darth Vader. Guess how much he made in 1977? $7,000. This comes to us from The Hollywood Reporter. James Earl Jones was only paid $7,000 to voice Darth Vader in Star Wars A New Hope. But the actress said for him, it was a huge score. To celebrate Star Wars Day, which was yesterday, May 4th, The Hollywood Reporter looked back at some of the interviews shows James gave through the years when he talked about voicing the legendary sci-fi villain. To start, Jones said he was paid only $7,000 for the blockbuster film, which was written and directed by George Lucas, which changed pop culture and filmmaking forever. He goes on to say that in a previous chat with the film institute AFI, American Film Institute, Jones explained that he was picked by Lucas, the actor in the suit. The late David Prowse had the enormous build, so he was in the suit, but Jones actually did the voice. Jones wanted part of the expression a dark voice, so he hired a guy born in Mississippi, raised in Michigan, who stutters. And that's the voice. That's me. I lucked out from all those so-called handicaps for a job that paid $7,000. And I thought that was good money at the time. I got to be a voice in a movie. In the same AFI interview, Jones said that when he returned for The Empire Strikes Back, he planned on giving a different performance than the one he delivered in A New Hope. Lucas shut that down quickly. He explained, "We don't know what we did, but we did it right, so let's just stay with it. Naturally, I wanted to make Darth Vader more interesting, more subtle, more psychologically oriented." And he said, no, just keep doing what you're doing. So he goes on, he talks about this, but here's a funny story that he does tell. He's like, so when he was driving cross-country, he was on a CB. I was driving cross country, had a CB radio, and I used the handle Darth Vader as my handle, the actor recalled. It freaked a lot of people out, so when I got to the truck stop, there was a lot of buzz about it, so I decided not to use it anymore. But that's incredible to think about. $7,000.
But again, like you said, at the time it was a good money.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, I would have been curious to find out, and we'll never know, but I would love to find out how much he got paid for Empire. I mean, because don't forget Star Wars was only made for $5 million. And I say only $5 million. That's a drop in the bucket today. But, you know, it's one of those interesting and cool stories to hear that one of the legendary actors of our time James Earl Jones got paid. I can't. That's amazing. $7,000 Ilwa. Now, once again, as you said, for 1977, he even said it. That was a huge score.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's like shocking now, but it's like our parents were probably making $2,000. Oh, whatever. And they're in support of the entire family, working their ass off for months and months and months. So I'm like, I'm not really sure. That's why I feel like comparing things money-wise is not really fair, you know?
No. And you're right to a certain extent, because there are some movies out there that these budgets are inflated, shall we say. And then there are some that don't, that aren't as big. So, I mean, but that was just a nifty little story that Star Wars has made billions and billions and billions of dollars. And we hear about all the stories and everything else, and the actor gets, well, for the time, a good amount of money.
Yeah, it has a huge fan base. It's a huge success, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Like you said, I'm sure nowadays that's not the case, right? I actually knew a Australian actor whose girlfriend was the voice actress for a very famous video game. And she was making a lot of money. And basically what this guy made for the entire movie, she was making almost an hour. It is obscene, the amount of money.
Yeah. But I will say one thing, though. It's much harder to voice act. Much harder. Because it's one of those things where you have to... You're not acting with someone. You're just in a sound booth with a microphone in front of you, kind of like what we're doing. And then you have to read these lines and the inflection of your voice and how it's read and everything else is so difficult because you don't have anybody to play off of. Whereas...
Sometimes you do. Sometimes you have people reading it back to you.
True. And that's definitely good, because if you have somebody playing it back to you, or not playing it back to you, but like acting with you, you can then do it differently. So, yeah.
It honestly, okay, so I'm not trying to dismiss them, but of course you can still see what's going on TV if you're talking about an animation, right? But I think the craziest is watching actors on green screens, you know, like, oh, you know, there's this giant beast that they're talking to, and in real life is literally a guy with a sock in their hand, and you is like, I could never do it. I feel like there's a viral video going on now of them, the backstage of Avatar, and it's hilarious. I could never.
Yeah, no, well, that's actually, in all honesty, that's how, I mean, what if, you know, going back to Marvel movies, but here's the thing, one of the biggest scenes, Civil War, Captain America Civil War, where all these heroes are going to go and fight each other, and well done to the CGI people that actually did this. That was all green screen. They weren't at an airport. There was all green screen. So, you know, you can just, the number of visual effects guys and because the practicality, one thing about film today is practicality is starting to go out the window. And if you can do it in a studio, you know, the size of a warehouse and with green screen, I mean, it saves a whole lot of money, you know, for production. So, yeah, that can be used for other things like marketing or, whatever, social media. So, anyways, I thought that was an interesting little note to end on. So, what do we have coming up next week? So, we have, of course, Doctor Strange, which I'm hoping you said you were going to go see. So, I'm going to go see it. Chomping at the bit to see this. I had to do some things, but, yeah. So, have you... I'm just curious, did you happen to see the first one yet?
Not yet. I want to see them both almost one back-to-back. I like to have it all.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. So, Flashbacks Friday starts tomorrow. So, our first episode will be Iron Man, and that will be fun. I will drop it right now. I'm still waiting for the episode to come back. But for all of our listeners, we've got a nice little thing coming up the start of June. So I did this interview with this man named Jeff Aiken, and he's a huge Star Trek fan. And so we are going to be introducing what's known as Sci-Fi Sundays. And we're going to be doing every, just like Flashback Fridays, we're doing every single Marvel movie. We're going to be doing every single Star Trek movie in order, starting with the 1977 Star Trek the Motion Picture, moving on to the Wrath of Khan with Kato Marimbon playing Khan, of course. Then you've got The Search for Spock, Star Trek III, The Voyage Home, and on and on and on and on. So Jeff and I were going to be starting that at the beginning of June. So we're going to be getting those done. And that way we have a whole other thing. And we've got a lot of stuff coming up this summer. We got Top Gun coming out at the end of the month. We got Thor, which comes out the 8th of July, which Ian will be back for that. And then there's a movie I'm actually dying. Sorry, quickly, because I know we got to go. But are you a horror fan? Do you like horror films?
I get scared. I get easily scared. So I try not to watch too much of those. I get easily impressed.
There is a movie I am dying to see, and I've seen the trailer for it, only the trailer. You'd be interested in watching it, too. It's called The Black Phone. It's about this kidnapper who takes, and it may sound crazy. He kidnaps his 13-year-old kid, and he locks him in this room. And in this room, there's a phone. And when the kid goes to pick the phone up, it's all of the voices of all of the kids this guy's ever kidnapped to try and help him get out. I'm really interested in seeing that. It sounds creepy, I know, but it's a different concept.
Because I live by myself. So it's like, next time someone comes, watch it. Now that I'm living alone.
I'm not a horror fan either. I'm not a big horror fan.
You know what? I think I got traumatized by The Shining. I watched that when I was 8, and I just could not.
Who let you watch The Shining at 8?
Oh my god!
Oh my goodness! No wonder why you don't like horror movies. It's a great horror movie, but
it was too much for that age, and then I could not sleep in the dark anymore.
That was years before they had PG-13.
I'm easily traumatized, and I have to deal with my traumas, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, but at the end of the month, we'll have Tom Cruise movies, which that will be interesting to see. And we just have a whole bunch of stuff coming up this summer, guys. So please, if you haven't already, hit the follow button. I got something else up my sleeve that is going to definitely raise some eyebrows, too. So it'll be interesting to see. Anyways, on that note, I'm David Steele.
And I'm Eloaura Zane.
And you have been listening to Real Talks.